gives us maximum flexibility.
Right. Thank you.
Commissioner, on that point, if I could just also point out, a number of the comments that preceded you from the public seemed to me to address concerns with state law, PECBA, and what state law does or does not provide. Correct. Binding arbitration, some of the distinctions, as Commissioner Leonard has noted, between permissive and mandatory and things of that nature. And so I think, in fairness, to the extent someone has a concern with arbitration, for example, or a number of these things, it is a creature of state law. PECBA is what governs these negotiations, and I think
what's PECBA?
Public Employee Collective Bargaining Act.
Yes.
State law. Commissioner Leonard probably had a hand in writing it, but I just certainly implementing it. Probably. And so I just want to, we don't want to turn this into a seminar on the law, but there are some rules that we have to operate within. I think it's
Correct.
To clarify that.
And Commissioner, you're correct, and that was the next issue that I was actually going to bring up as far as binding arbitration, is that it is covered under state law. And so that is not something that we have the ability to just negotiate out of the contract.
Commissioner Fritz.
Can you remind
Aaron,
me?
I thought we had that fixed.
I'm trying.
It's very challenging. The cost of the contract over 3 years is estimated at $5 million, and this includes a 2% raise. Could you remind me what was the Seattle experience when the union agreed to do drug testing?
When Seattle actually put in their police review changes in what they thought was discipline, it actually cost them between 25% and 36% of wage increase over a 4-year period.
So that wasn't drug testing with in Seattle?
No, that was just to do what we do, what we call IPR, and to look at discipline.
And does this contract include the added day off after Thanksgiving? The day after Thanksgiving?
What it includes is an extra floating holiday. And so the police bureau, of course, function 24/7. And so there's an extra floating holiday in this.
And remind me, what was the total cost of that for citywide for the extra day after Thanksgiving or the floating holiday versus the savings on the not doing the 0.7 cost of living increase?
The actual cost for the extra holiday is zero. The savings for not doing a cost of living is about $10
million. $10
million. Yes.
Because I thought there was a little bit of increase in overtime for those, like the police bureau, that would actually get paid for working the extra shift or working the holiday shift.
I don't believe, because it's a floating holiday, the bureau gets to manage it, and so it shouldn't result in any additional overtime because they can, request and assign it as need to without backfill. And that's the important thing about the comp time piece, is that the Bureau will no longer have to do backfills because they have the ability to deny or cancel comp time if it results in them having to now bring extra officers on and create and increase their overtime costs.
And just on the comp time issue, we did get a ruling in arbitration which said that the officers could use their comp time whenever they wanted to, which then resulted in increased overtime costs because the managers weren't able to spread that out. And that's partly what our 2% increase is designed to avoid.
Correct, Commissioner. And so we knew that in order to counteract such a ruling that we would have to, buy the ability to have sole discretion, and that's what the 2% was for. Everything else in the contract is mostly incentives in order to improve officers' performance and education.
Thank you.
Couple of questions. So I want to return just to the steroids because that's something I care a lot about. And I just want to make it clear. So right now, under reasonable suspicion that an officer has used steroids, we can test. That test costs how much? $1,000 maybe?
I would wager it would cost you more than that.
Okay.
It's a pretty expensive test, but I don't have the exact cost.
Okay.
But we expect the cost to go down.
Right.
Correct.
And labs that do it are not local. I think you told me that once before.
Correct.
Okay. So, what is the tip point? Because under this proposed policy, then, we have the ability to test for steroids under the random basis. But we will not choose to do that until there's some intersection of cost effectiveness
Yeah, I think.
And the safety and the public safety. And I think the public safety argument is a strong one. So, yeah, at what point does it become the right cost that we would do this as part of the random?
We will start to work with the lab to bring them on to do the ongoing random testing. And our hopes is that we will work with them, and as they develop their ability to do the testing for the steroids, and then at that point, you know, we would add it in to our regular random testing.
So the lab you're gonna choose to work with will make a commitment to develop the steroid testing capacity?
That would be, no, I'm not saying that they're going to make a commitment, but our goal is to, you know, I think steroid testing is sort of like right now in its infancy, and so as labs are able to actually perform the test, then we will add that into our normal random testing. It's just that right now that doesn't exist.
Well, no, I understand the reasonable suspicion. It just sounds the goalpost is a little elusive on when we would start steroid testing.
On the random basis. The challenge is that steroid testing is quite elusive. My father was considered by some a world expert on this, and even in the sports world, there are lots of challenges to the methodology, to the results, to the factors that can influence how the current testing comes out. So it's an addition to the cost effort. It's the validity of the testing has a lot of variables, which is why we have so much in the news about whether or not athletes are using or not. And for many, it's whether they say that they then admit rather than that the tests prove things.
Right.
So it's not an exact science at this point, I think.
Yeah, and I realize it's not an exact science. I guess what I'd like to request is that when you select the lab after we approve this agreement, to get back to us with some sort of more of a timeline about when we could expect steroid capacity testing, or if it's truly too elusive and too expensive, you know, I'd like to know that too.
Sure, I will provide you with information.
Just to be clear, it's not a lack of resolve in wanting to do this. Police officers should not be using steroids. End of story, unless it's prescribed for some medical reason.
Right.
It is a statement of reality, not our lack of interest. It's a statement of reality and getting access to it, and the science needs to continue to improve. But
we wanted to have the ability to do it as science catches up with us, and that's why we made sure that we have it as part of our policy, and so that we wouldn't have to go back. Science catches up, but now we got to go back and try to negotiate
We'll be happy to keep you and the rest of council.
Yes.
Yeah, we can come back.
You'll be selecting a lab within 3 months. Does that sound right? Or is it subject to a procurement?
Right. We'll be working with the Bureau to get that piece done. And the goal is to have the random, the lab on board, and that random testing will begin by July, by the beginning of the fiscal year.
Would that agreement come to council for a contract?
I'm sure it would, unless we, you know, piggyback off of the lab that we have now, and we have a contract. But if it's a new contract, we'll definitely come to council. Okay.
Whether it's above or below the threshold, we're happy to bring it back to council.
Yes.
So I have a couple questions on testimony regarding IPR. I don't know if Lavon, if you want to come up and sit next to Yavon.
Lavon and Yavon.
You got it right this time.
I always get it right.
Okay.
There are others up here that may not, but I always do.
Okay.
So the issue of subpoena power came up, so I just wanted to make sure, Lavon, that I had this correct. When we included the subpoena power authority, when we beefed up the IPR's powers, that was essentially to address the issue of officers who had separated from the police bureau for a variety of reasons, who were no longer members of the police bureau, to be compelled to submit to an interview.
I'm going to ask Constantine to join us too, but I think largely it's to be able to get investigative documents and files to ensure that we can do that.
But my recollection also was, because the criticism was we didn't include it for active members of the Bureau, my recollection was that they are ordered to answer questions truthfully, and then we didn't need subpoena power for active members of the Bureau, but rather there had been specific instances not only of the documents,
right.
I recall that as well, but specific instances where retired police officers refused to be interviewed.
That's where we've had the issues. Am I right, Congressman?
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's for persons who were separated from the Bureau who couldn't be compelled anymore by IAD. So we could either talk to those persons or if they had documents in their on their person about those type of issues or witnesses involved in cases where internal affairs couldn't actually get to those documents, but with the use of the subpoena power, IPR could be collaborating with them and get those documents.
So we didn't lose any of the authority that we intended when we passed the IPR reform.
Yeah, that was meant to be independent of current PPB members.
And then the question by IPR, questioning by IPR of officers, as I recall, the way that the protocol exists currently is that you may partner with a member of the Bureau that asks the questions of the officers, and up to now, the PPA has agreed to also allow you to question the officers as well in those interviews.
That's exactly right. I've attended numerous interviews with involved officers or witness officers, and I've been allowed to ask questions directly, and PPA has been cooperative with that. And in the case when it's been a PPCOA member, they've been cooperative as well. And I know Director Baptista and Assistant Director Sandrock have had a similar experience.
Great. Thank you, Constantine.
Just to emphasize what your point, Commissioner Leonard, the officer being present can then compel, the commanding officer can compel the current officer to testify, which you can't. So that's one of the reasons to leave it the way it is in the contract.
Exactly. There's an admonishment given by the Internal Affairs Director, Internal Affairs Investigator at the beginning of any interview with a PPB member, basically explaining what you just said. And that's how we're able to get information from officers.
Thank you for that clarification.
Thank you. Unless there's additional council discussion, Sue, would you please call the vote?
Fritz.
Thank you to all who've been involved in this. Yvonne, Steve Heron, Daryl Turner. It's one of our last contracts to come to council, and it certainly took the time. Thank you to the community members who monitored the process and gave valuable input. There's three particular parts of this contract. Well, there's many parts of the contract that I'm pleased with. The shift differential being established, I think, is crucial, 2% for nights, 1% for afternoon shift. This gives an incentive for more experienced officers to work those off shifts, and therefore is likely to improve the consistency of delivery of services on those shifts. And having worked evening shift for 27 years, I appreciate that it is an impact on family time to work hours that most people don't, and so I'm really pleased with that change. I hope we can do it in some of the other 24/7 bureaus moving on. I'm very pleased that the Portland Police Association accepted all of the Police Review Board and Independent Police Review changes. And I think that, again, is a tribute to the community members and to this council that worked between the first hearing and the second hearing in March of last year, and indeed the auditor's office as well and the IPR staff, to make sure that there were amendments put in at your suggestion to make sure that we, as far as possible, didn't do anything that would be a problem against the contract or against state law, has been referenced by my colleagues. So that's a significant success that we now have in the contract, what is also in the IPR agreements, and I appreciate Commissioner Leonard's leadership on that. And the final thing that I'm particularly pleased about is the health and fitness premium of 1%. And citizens might wonder, well, aren't police officers supposed to be fit anyway, like firefighters, for example? And the difference being that firefighters have time on the job to do their fitness training and to keep their level of fitness up. Police officers largely don't, and yet we certainly need them to be able to get out of their cars or from behind their desks and do the physical work that is sometimes required. So I, as the commissioner in charge of wellness throughout the city, and with your help, Yvonne, and the wellness staff, I think this is significant. It also saves the citizens money because taxpayer money, of course, pays for all city employees' benefits. The more healthy we all are, the less we're charging to health insurance. And so this small incentive, which is Mr. Turner told me this morning it works out to be about the cost of a fitness club membership for a month, does encourage officers to maintain their physical fitness and reward those who do. So I'm very pleased about that. The cost is significant, that's for sure, $5 million, over $5 million. We will need to budget, and I appreciate Andrew Scott's analysis of this, that even though we may appear to have what's been termed by some a surplus this year in our upcoming budget, in the years out, we don't. And so this is something that we definitely need to consider and keep in mind. But again, going back to there being no cost of living increase this year when there could have been a 0.7 increase according to the previous contracts, that saves the taxpayers $10 million a year. And that is ongoing, not just this year. So a lot of work went into this. And Yvonne, I know that you worked late hours into the wee hours of the morning, as did others, and on all of the contracts. So that's a lot of heartache as well as and worrying and shepherding. And I certainly appreciate also your keeping the entire council in the loop on all of the contracts so that we're able to get to this point where I can feel very comfortable supporting this. Aye.
Fish.
Well, Amanda apparently saw my talking point, so I want to associate myself with everything she's just said because I think she said it very, very well. You know, before I got elected, I spent 20 years in labor relations and saw mostly the private side. I know Commissioner Leonard spent about the same amount of time in the public side. What I came to appreciate, though, is that you don't get to agreement unless both sides are willing to compromise, and they come in good faith trying to reach agreement. This was a tough negotiation because it happened during a recession. When our budgets were tight. And it was also a tough negotiation because this council made clear there were some must-haves in this process. And I think it's fair to say there were some people in the community who doubted whether we'd get to agreement. But we had a bunch of must-haves. And in large measure, they are reflected in this agreement. So, Yvonne, thank you for your good work. The mayor reminds me there's one more agreement to come. That means this is the penultimate agreement,
yes.
Penultimate. Not the last one.
Right.
But
what that means?
Mm-hmm. The second to last, I think. But so you've
who knows?
Now you're just showing off. Randy's the wordsmith. I did that for his benefit.
Penultimate.
So anyway, thank you and congratulations for bringing this home. To Daryl Turner, I want to say that a couple of things. First, when he got elected, one of the first things he did is he scheduled appointments with all the members of the council, and he came in and sat privately with each of us and said, you know, how do we improve the relationship? What things do we need to do looking forward? And he talked a little bit about his philosophy of leadership. Well, I also know from my work in labor relations that anybody can take their troops to war. It takes leadership to actually make the peace. And this negotiation was not easy, and clearly there was some hiccups along the way. But it required leadership to bring it home. And I would suspect that there are many reasons that a different leader of that association could have found as an excuse not to make this deal. But in fairness, he brought it home, and I think we have to acknowledge the work that he did on the other side, because you do not get an agreement unless two people work hard to make the agreement. And finally, I want to just thank the mayor and Commissioner Leonard for all the work they've done to set the stage around the IPR changes with the auditor and the whole team, because the reforms that we said were must-haves predated these negotiations, but then we said they had to be in this agreement, and in large measure they are. So today I'm pleased to support this agreement and thank all who made it happen. Aye.
Elsman.
Well, I believe this is a fair agreement for the city, the public, and the members of the Portland Police Association. And I thank all 70% of them who approved this agreement. I am pleased this agreement contains a random drug testing policy with a treatment option. I think that's humane, and I believe it's a first for a major police bureau in the United States to have that treatment option. I think that's important that we recognize that. And I believe it's a good step forward in continuing to build trust between our residents and our police force. I do care very much about the steroids, and I think we have to figure out a way to bring that on sooner rather than later. And I realize it's a complicated issue, but nevertheless, it is a crucial public safety issue. Our public needs confidence that steroids aren't messing up our officers in the wrong situations. We need that clear, simple, just as we need it for testing any other illegal substance. So I'll be following that closely. I appreciate the changes with respect to the independent police review, and also I think the many other elements of this agreement are good. I share the gentleman's from the Fire Flash Hour campaign's frustration that we can't change sort of the arbitration laws. That's something the state legislature can do. They seem to me sometimes arbitrators' decisions seem to really, and I'm not referencing this particular arbitrator's decision on comp time, but many others that we've all seen over the years, maybe just because we're management, they seem to defy common sense. I wish there was a way to change some of the standards, but that's going to take state action. So in sum, I just want to thank the bargaining team. I want to thank Yvonne Deckard, Steve Heron, and all the other people, and Daryl Turner with the Portland Police Association for working together to create an equitable agreement. I'm pleased to vote aye.
Leonard.
So I worked for the city in one capacity or another for 33 years now, and I still tell people the most challenging thing I've ever done is to negotiate a collective bargaining agreement. Of course, that was I've done that in two capacities now, one labor and one management, and definitely the labor side was the most challenging because, as I believe Daryl's probably appreciating as his tenure as the police union president continues, is it's pretty easy when you're a non-incumbent to go around and criticize what has happened. It's quite another thing to sit down with the other side and then try to translate that into a collective bargaining agreement that might reflect some of the basis for which you ran in the first place. It's very challenging. And in that context, I want to make clear, and I hope what I say gets translated to the public exactly how I mean it, that this is a historic agreement with the Portland Police Union. And the testimony notwithstanding, critical of it, some of the observations made notwithstanding that say we could have done better, this is by all accounts, in my experience, a historic agreement. I was stunned at the concessions that were reached at the table by both sides. I mean, I didn't think we would do some of the things that we've agreed to do, and I would have bet the police union would not have agreed to do some of the things they've now agreed to do. Certainly that includes the IPR changes. The IPR changes were significant and should not be underestimated. The influence now that the independent police review has in making police processes more transparent, which is what drove those to pass in the first place last March when Yvonne and I partnered to bring that ordinance forward. The alcohol and drug testing needs to be acknowledged for what it is. It is a truly historic provision in a police union contract. It would be historic in any contract, particularly in a police union contract. I could not support an alcohol and drug testing program, to be clear, that didn't include the possibility of treatment for particularly the two substances you've identified, alcohol and marijuana. I would also given the nature of the work that the police officers are required to do, the stresses associated with that, and my knowledge that notwithstanding what some people think of police officers, and oftentimes what they think of themselves, that they're human beings, and they're susceptible to try to figure out how to reduce their stress in sometimes healthy ways, such as the provision for physical fitness that we have in here, and sometimes unhealthy ways by drinking, which can lead to other abuses. So I'm very pleased that we not only have the random alcohol and drug testing, but that it does contain the provision for treatment. And the last notable change, of course, is, as Commissioner Fritz pointed out, the physical fitness requirement. It is, and Commissioner Fritz is right, firefighters build it in as part of their workday, and they realize that it isn't so much that one as a firefighter stays in shape because it's what you should do. You can't do your job unless you do it. It's a very physically demanding job. And police officers oftentimes, not always, but oftentimes find themselves in a foot chase or struggling for their life or assisting a citizen or another officer. And you go from being sedentary, much like in the fire service, to everything you have all out. And It's at those critical moments that the individual realizes, I need to do something about getting myself in better shape. That we have this thoughtful incentive in place to do that is really creative, and I appreciate it. So I want to make sure you get the credit that I think you deserve in this agreement, because I have not heard it said yet. Of course, the mayor's got his remarks to make, but I am and exceedingly proud of your work, Daryl Turner's work, the police association's work, and all of those involved in seeing this process through, not just because it's difficult to negotiate a contract, because as hard as it was for me, the public didn't clamor to come in and watch me negotiate a contract for the firefighters like they do for the police contract. So you have the typical stressors involved in trying to compromise and find middle ground while constantly being watched and criticized publicly. I watched that as it happened. I had empathy for both sides as it was occurring, and I want to acknowledge that to produce this kind of a document in that kind of an atmosphere really takes professionalism, focus, and the ability to compromise, all of which you've demonstrated in the document we have here today. I'm very pleased to vote aye.
Adams.
Well, this is the most aggressive set of police bureau reforms. This is the most aggressive set of police contract reforms in a generation. And it will allow for more cost-effective bureau. It'll allow for a more trusted bureau by the public. It will allow us to reward through performance evaluations folks that are doing a great job, and allow us to give officers who want to do the right thing but might be underperforming the ability to improve. This allows us to implement the reforms sought or championed by Commissioner Leonard, subjecting the Bureau in more places to outside review than ever in its history. And I want to thank you. As police commissioner, your work, Steve, Yvonne, your team's work on this was stellar. I also want to thank the union for being creative as well. And for sticking with us and for helping to come up with these. I'm really pleased to vote aye. Thank you. Approved. Can you please read the title for time certain, 10:15 site time certain, item number 109.
Authorize an intergovernmental agreement with Multnomah County for the design and construction of the Selwood Bridge project.
Coming up. So, back when I was just a transportation commissioner, I was the first one to step forward with a financial commitment to build the Selwood Bridge, rebuild the Selwood Bridge, working with then-chair Ted Wheeler as part of Safe, Sound, and Green. Even though the Selwood Bridge is not a city bridge, I said it was a city problem, a city challenge, and was able to, with the passage of new resources at the state level, we committed $8 million a year, $100, $160, depending on what the final numbers figure out, in city resources for a county bridge. But it is our bridge, and we need to take care of it. My commitment, was not a blank check, was not a blind offer. It is a bridge in the middle of the city, and I also had to deal with a federal government that did not come through with the kinds of resources that we were hoping for Portland-Milwaukee Light Rail. We also saw the opportunity by both Chair Kogan and I and our teams pressing on the state, who has a road on one end of the bridge, to be more creative with us so that we could, among other among other cost savings, so that we could have a more common sense West Side approach that would save a lot of money. Those savings and the agreement to split them 50-50 means that in terms of the City of Portland and Multnomah County, we are going to be able to move forward with our commitment, commitments on the bridge, and the city's going to be able to fund the additional financial requirements on Portland-Milwaukee light rail. I want to thank Chair Kogan, Commissioner Kafori, for sticking with some very difficult negotiations at times, but we got it done. And I think that, and in addition to that, I think the design that's been chosen is really beautiful. Are you listening, people of the CRC? The design on this bridge was really beautiful.
And not the highest priced.
And not the highest priced. Good design does not necessarily mean the most expensive option. I want to thank you, Bureau Manager Sue Keel, and your team. I want to thank Catherine Charlo and the departed Chief of Staff, Tom Miller, for your work on this.
I'm delighted to, this is Susan Keel, Director of Transportation. I am delighted to bring this forward today. It's the culmination of some not maybe as difficult negotiations as the labor negotiations, but kind of long in terms of the time frame on it. The last few months, it's been pretty much the crossing T's and dotting I's between the attorneys and the financial people, but it clearly defines the project in that IGA. It's identified as a regional project, which it is. It's the same $100 million, the $160 million that Sam was talking about was the financing cost for the $100 million as the outside on that. So it limits our basic contribution to the $100 million. It identifies that we would sell revenue bonds in support of our contribution on this against the House Bill 2001 money. The funds would be reimbursed to the county as they ask for them rather than on an advance sort of basis. We have agreed that the cost savings will be addressed by a senior staff advisory committee. I sit on that currently, and representatives of the other partner jurisdictions looking at the project costs, and if we can't sort that out in our own right, it will go to the elected body that the mayor sits on, as do other elected officials who are part of the partner agencies. Changes to any of the streetcar design are solely between us and the county. The first half of the $40 million project savings accrues equally to us and to the county. So in that, we would have $20 million that would come back to us. After that, and that's based on the original project cost of $330 million. So we have already made some good improvements in savings, and we're only at the 30% design. And if you want to talk about that, we really do have the resident expert on that in the room, Ian Cannon, from the county. But after that first $40 million, then it will be determined on a pro rata basis where the savings will go. A modification that's encompassed in this is that we have identified the specific streetcar design and accommodations that the county will perform, and that includes concrete blockouts on the bridge, the approach structures and interchange, conduits and junction boxes, streetlight pole foundations that can handle the catenary wire should we need to put those on the bridge. And the original stated that tracks and infrastructure would be included in this to support streetcar, and the bridge is being built in a manner that will both handle the weight and easily be able to accommodate a streetcar when it's time for that. We added a provision that we can terminate the agreement if the county doesn't move forward on this within 10 years. I think that's highly unlikely, but the provision is there. And that's essentially what's in that agreement. So I would encourage your passage of it.
Well, before we have any council discussion on it, we've got courtesies of the House. If Commissioner Kafori and Chair Kogan want to come up and say a few words, and if you could
exit stage left.
I appreciate your patience, and thanks for sitting through our contract negotiations considerations. So I really appreciate, I want to thank you both for helping to make this happen. And your leadership, including your work down in the state legislature for the state contribution that I don't think a lot of people know about, was absolutely key. The fact that you went from, you stepped in for Chair Wheeler and working with Commissioner Cafori, seamlessly picked up on the conversations and the work on this was a real blessing. And whether on a daily basis we agree or disagree on the details, it's moving forward because of both of your leadership. And I want to thank you for that. And sticking with us to come up with an agreement that I think is going to move the bridge forward to completion. We just have a few other tiny, tiny little building blocks to close. Chair?
Very true. Thank you, Mayor Adams, members of council. I'm Jeff Kogan from Multnomah County, and I just want to really reiterate what's been said. This is a significant accomplishment. The Selwood Bridge has needed to be rebuilt for decades, and for decades, this community has struggled to figure out how to make that happen. And thanks largely to the legislation the state put in place that allowed us to have these different funding mechanisms. But that wasn't enough, because that just set the building blocks. We had to figure this out. And working together, we were able to make this happen. And there were some bumps along the road, but the end result is one that we should all really be proud of. And I think that in addition to the fact that we now have identified more than 80% of the resources to build this bridge, and we've got the others coming, we're going to build this bridge. I really think that this partnership that helped address one of our greatest community needs in really difficult times lays the groundwork for a lot of other things that we can achieve working together. And I feel really blessed to have great partnerships, and I think the community can feel really well served by the city and the county working together to meet our community's needs. So I just wanted to thank you and acknowledge the good work, the challenging negotiations, but the fact that our political staff, our attorneys, and frankly the technical staff kept at it. And at the end of the day, we wound up with something which is really, it's something you talk about a lot but rarely find, a better project that's cheaper than it was originally. And it's something that we really should all be proud of. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Deborah Cafori, Multnomah County. I also want to thank all of you for your commitment to this project from the beginning. I mean, I think when we started with everyone on the same page, realizing that this, we needed to have a new bridge and it needed to be rebuilt. And we know that in today's world, rarely does one jurisdiction have enough money to pay for these really enormous cost projects. And so this project really did take everyone coming to the table. In addition to the city and the county, I just want to mention Clackamas County, which is also taking a huge step in putting money into a project that's not in their geographic boundaries. I think that's unheard of, but really it is necessary to get this done because it is a regional asset. The state of Oregon is also contributing, and the federal government. And I would be remiss if I didn't acknowledge that this is the penultimate decision, because the county will be voting tomorrow.
Well, thank you both very much, and thanks for your time here. I know you're very, very busy. I will see you tomorrow.
To ask a question. Mm-hmm. So 80% of the resources for funding the bridge are in place or identified? Or
somewhat more than that, yeah.
So, yeah, where's the remaining 15% or 20% expected?
At this point, we expect that it's about a $290 million project, and we have about $270 million identified. The last bit we're looking to the federal government for, and we expect to get that. If we don't, we'll be able to come up with it elsewhere, but we do think the federal government's going to make that happen.
We are starting construction in July of 2012.
Yes.
And could you just remind us what happens if Clackamas County can't move forward with its commitment because of the referral?
Then we'll be $22 million further from the finish line. But even at that point, we believe that we'll be able to move forward. We don't think that's going to happen. But in any event, the money we're now having identified from the city, which is up to $100 million, depending on what the final price is. The county is committing $127 million.
The state has put in $30 million, and we already have about $11 million left over from the federal government contribution in the EIS stage. That's enough of a base to get this bridge built. We'll figure out the rest of
it. So since Sue mentioned that there's a 10-year clause where we could terminate it, I'm just projecting, thinking 10 years from now, Deborah's reclaimed the Kefauri seat on this council. Chantel Monk is the county chair addressing us. And we're trying, what else could happen that could prevent us from getting to the end zone here?
Well, I mean, it's hard to foresee the future, but we think
nothing. I'm confident we're going to build the bridge.
Yeah.
As I said, we're going to start construction in July of 2012. And we are doing a process called CMGC where we will be working with the designers and the contractors to come up with the best solution for the money that we have in hand. I mean, we're going to build the bridge. I'm confident that Clackamas County is going, they've committed to be a partner in this. Whether the vehicle registration fee is the avenue for those dollars to come, I'm confident that they'll find elsewhere if something should occur. But I also think that the citizens of Clackamas County realize that they use this bridge as much as everybody else, and $5 a year is really not a lot to pay.
Mayor, could I also just acknowledge that with Deborah taking the lead on housing issues at the county, I'd be hard-pressed to think in the last 15 years we've had a better partner and a better working relationship on stuff. And with the new COO of the county being someone who has been helping us work out some issues, we're trying to move the ball on thinking about a single pot of money and a new way of approaching housing and homelessness issues. And Deborah's been great to work with.
Very good. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Let's see if anyone signed up to testify before additional council discussion.
Terry Parker.
Mr. Parker. Welcome back. It's been a while. We've missed you.
No burning issues for me.
Terry Parker, Northeast Portland. Although the arches are nice, given the excessive supersized sidewalks and bike lanes that allocate more deck space for bicyclists and pedestrians than for cars, the proposed design of the new Selwood Bridge is basically a bicycle and pedestrian bridge that only replaces the two motor vehicle lanes that already exist. I commend Multnomah County for eliminating the conceivably never used and slippery slope streetcar tracks on the bridge. However, more of the lavish and wasteful spending can be reined in. By narrowing the sidewalks to a reasonable width and eliminating the pedestrian viewpoints, the disproportionate price tag of the project can be reduced still further with little to no impact on alternative transport mobility. This, too, would provide a better balance when it comes to proportional funding issues. Because only the special interests of alternative activists received all the attention, while the issues and concerns of motorists, for the most part, were ignored throughout the design phase, I fully agree with and support the people of Clackamas County who are petitioning for a public vote that allows them to opt out on paying an extra motor vehicle registration fee to help fund this project. Under the circumstances, Multnomah County vehicle owners should have be guaranteed the same, that is, be able to vote on opting out. Motorists who are expected to fund the project, including all the non-motorist amenities, were woefully underrepresented throughout the entire public process. This persistent bias is way too typical when it comes to Portland area transportation projects. Freeloading bicyclists and hanger-on alternative transportation activists from the bridge impact area dominated the advisory decision-making progression. Sustainability starts with financial self-sustainability. The overall size and scope of this project needs to be ratcheted back with bicyclists and neighboring walkable communities chipping in and helping to shoulder the financial burden, matching the funding for motor vehicle owners dollar for dollar. The current financial scheme and deck design, rather I should say, financial scam when it comes to extorting money from motor vehicle owners as if they were an on-tap ATM, simply lacks any kind of fairness and equity. It's a form of social engineering and authoritarian tax discrimination that needs to be revisited with a new majority balance of taxpaying motorist representation at the table instead of just having the moochers engaged. In closing, if the spandex-clad pedal pushers can continue to be Portlandia typecast slackers and not be charged fees for the specialized infrastructure on this bridge and elsewhere, likewise the delivery of mainstream basic services such as water, sewer, and garbage pickup, along with all the recreational activities that take place on public golf courses, in public tennis and rec centers and at public swimming pools also needs to take place free of charge with no fees. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Parker. Additional council discussion? Sue, would you please call the vote?
We have just a slight technicality. Need to have you amend to accept the new Exhibit A. The first one was the draft of contract.
Second.
So moved and seconded to accept the substitute Exhibit A. Please call the vote on the motion.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Well, I have been characterized in many different ways, but none I am more proud of than a spandex-clad pedal pusher. I actually look forward to wearing my spandex and pushing my pedals to go over the Selwood Bridge when it's done. I commend Mayor Adams and Chair Kogan for actually doing a lot of what we were talking about in the last measure that we discussed. Compromising to come up with what really is, as Sue Keel accurately pointed out, a much better design that's cheaper. And I appreciate all the work, and I'm glad you have Vista Views there. I will take advantage of those as well. Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Motion approved. Can you please call the vote on the motion on the council calendar item? Ordinance.
Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor Adams, for your leadership on this, and Chair Kogan for your partnership. Commissioner Kafori as the commissioner of the district where this bridge is located. A lot of good work by the staff as well, and thank you. And it's worth noting that there's a lot of staff work going into this as well as the money, and that several city bureaus will continue to partner with county staff and others on this, including Bureaus of Transportation, Parks, Environmental Services, the Water Bureau, Office of Healthy Working Rivers, and the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, as well as TriMet and all of our other partners. So contrary to public opinion or perhaps journalist opinion, the city and the county and other jurisdictions do work together well, and we'll continue to work on that. And this is an example of how, as Commissioner Kafori said, we couldn't get this done without us all working together. And because we're all investing in it, it means that we're all invested in getting it done as efficiently as possible, using taxpayers' money wisely, whether it's from the federal government, state level, or local taxpayers. We understand our responsibility, and I'm very, very glad that this is going to get done. Happy to hear that it gets started in the July of 2012. Aye.
Fish.
Well, I believe the Selwood Bridge has been and continues to be our number one transportation priority. Am I right, Sue, that we've identified? So this is the right thing to do, but it would not have happened without, on our side, the mayor's focus and leadership and Sue Keel bringing it home. And, Sue, thank you for your great work. And on the other side of the river, to our friends, the chair and Chair Kogan and Deborah Kafori and that team, I want to echo what Commissioner Fritz just said, because in my experience, the overwhelming amount of time we spend working together is getting to solutions and working things out. Now, that's not newsworthy. The newspaper is going to say war breaks out. It's not going to have a bold column saying peace breaks out. But the reality is that
I dare them.
In every negotiation, there's bumps in the road. The real test is how you end up, not taking the temperature along the way. And I think we spend too much time in this community getting hung up on style points and not enough on substance. And at this point, we have a better product thanks to leadership of two bodies and two leaders. So thank you very much. And Mayor Adams, I'm proud to vote aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I want to thank Mayor Adams, Chair Kogan, Commissioner Kafori, Sue Keel, all the people both in the county and the city who have worked, and also those of Clackamas County. But a special thanks to Multnomah County voters for approving to tax themselves on their vehicle registration fee. We hope the Clackamas County will continue on that same course of wisdom and recognizing that this is the number one transportation priority. And as one city commissioner up here, I commit that we, should budgets go awry for any reason, you know, we are here as a partner to make sure this project gets finished. It's a great design. It's going to have great attributes to get vehicle flow as well as pedestrians and bicycles. But we need to remember it's like rated at the bottom of the list of in terms of the most dangerous bridges, certainly in the Portland area, if not, in fact, the state. So it's, all engines on go to make sure this project gets done. And there may be bumps in the road, but we are committed here to work with the county as a full partner, recognizing what a resource this is to our residents, as well as county residents, Clackamas County residents, and to the region. So I'm pleased to vote aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Approved. All right, can you please read the, I think that gets us to, can you please read item, council calendar item, resolution S-122.
Create an independent citizen oversight committee for specific City of Portland technology projects and direct the Office of Management and Finance in preparing all necessary changes to city code and administrative rules.
Commissioner Dan Saltzman.
Thank you, Mayor. I guess I first need to make a motion to accept the substitute resolution.
So moved. With one, would you accept a friendly amendment?
Yes.
On the, so just for the records, the third line down on the 1, 2, 3, 4th from the bottom, be it resolved, it's instead of council, say mayor.
Yes.
Moved and seconded. Please call.
I'm sorry again, that where were we at?
Under the project sponsor designation, it would be the mayor appointed.
Yes,
got it. Yeah. Or designated.
Yeah.
So it's been moved and seconded. Council, please call the vote on the motion.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Commissioner Dan Saltzman.
Thank you, Mayor. This resolution, just to recap, its overall intent is to provide some checks and balances on decisions around need and developing requests for proposals for information technology, which includes hardware, software, telecommunications projects, which, as we all know from our own experiences, are complicated projects. And we need to build some more safeguards to make sure that projects are done on time and on budget. Hopefully, the resolution and the companion ordinances that will come forward will do that. It does it through three main ways. It creates at least a five-person citizen oversight committee with people grounded in backgrounds around software and hardware. That membership, be one member appointed, each appointed by a member of council. OMF has the ability to add additional members as a project's expertise may need. The second thing is to make it sort of a standard best practice. We know we've been doing that, but to make sure that all projects have external quality assurance consultants and that they are brought on early on, as will the citizen committee, and looking at both not only how to craft the RFP, but also whether the project is in fact necessary. And that's in fact one of the changes that's made in this resolution as a result of last week's discussion. And then the final point is for the council to review these projects on a quarterly basis with the oversight committee, project managers, and the external quality assurance consultants. And again, this is really modeled on how the PSSRP process we had a few months ago was, where we had exactly those people at the table. And I think that's a good model that we're going to follow. So some of the changes that we've incorporated from last week, and all your staff and you have both received the substitute. Specifically, the committee is now directed to be used before a request for proposals is even developed. This will provide another set of eyes on the proposed projects and question if the project is truly needed. The resolution now requires the citizen committee, to develop an annual work plan detailing their expected work for the coming year and their priorities. I know that was important to the mayor. We make it clear that at any time, council can create a subcommittee for specific projects, and this can and should include user groups impacted by the project, something I believe Commissioner Fritz stressed last week. And as the mayor requested, we've directed the Bureau of Information Technology to specifically utilize the recommendations contained in the Lessons Learned from Implementing Enterprise Business Solution in the City of Portland document, the City Auditor Griffin Villade's audit of the SAP system. And finally, we've made it clear that projects involving multiple city bureaus will have one primary lead council member as designated by the mayor, and being ultimately responsible for the successful implementation of a specific project when it, again, when it crosses multiple bureaus. So I want to thank everybody up here, my colleagues, for their involvement on this. I want to thank Auditor Griffin Vallade, Mark Grinke of the Bureau of Technology Services, and Ken Rust. And I urge your approval and remind you that it will, this will come back in terms of an implementing ordinance in March.
I have one question or clarification, and I appreciate you adding the line about representing specific users. Is the council agree that those specific users could be Bureau employees or they could be external users, depending on what, who we feel would be best helpful? So it could be somebody who's used a system or an outside expert, but it could also be a City of Portland employee. In other words, it doesn't have to be outside citizen volunteers. It could be Bureau employees as well, and it doesn't have to be just Bureau employees. It could be outside citizen volunteers on that subcommittee
on the subcommittee.
Yeah,
yeah. I think the Citizen Oversight Committee should be citizens,
right,
with grounded backgrounds in this area. But yeah.
This users group could be,
yes,
Bureau folks, or it could include citizen folks if that's relevant. Thank you.
Anyone wish to testify on this resolution? Sue, would you please call the vote on the resolution?
Fritz.
Commissioner Saltzman, I appreciate you bringing this forward. Actually, everyone on the council is very supportive of this. Commissioner Leonard gave us the stage for this with the Public Safety Revitalization System project and the way that that's set up. And then Commissioner Fish helped us last week in figuring out the different parts that needed to be amended. The mayor has added his pieces. So this is something that we all own, and we all had part in crafting the final version, and I appreciate everybody's work on this. And I'm looking forward to the citizen volunteers, the Bureau staff, and others who will now be involved in reviewing these projects. Aye.
Fish.
Well, I want to first begin by thanking Jim Blackwood on my team for helping me on this project. And some of you may not know that in a prior life, Jim was in charge of the IT functions for the Standard. And so he has a wealth of experience in this and is actually helping one of my bureaus think through a new technology challenge. So thank you, Jim. Dan, thanks for bringing this forward, and I was very pleased to co-sponsor it with you. And I also appreciate that following last week's hearing, you incorporated, I think, a lot of good ideas that this body brought forward. And so I think this resolution is even stronger. Our goal here is to strengthen transparency and accountability when implementing large information technology projects and communication projects. I believe this will strengthen accountability and transparency, and I look forward to seeing the code come back to us, proposed code and administrative rules for review. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I also want to thank Matt Grum of my staff and also Jim Blackwood of Commissioner Fish's staff for their invaluable input on this, and as well as Commissioner Fish, my co-sponsor. Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. So approved. Can we move next to resolution item number 123?
Declare intent to initiate local improvement district formation proceedings to construct street, sidewalk, and stormwater improvements in the Southeast 82nd Avenue of Roses and Bybee Boulevard Local Improvement District.
Hi. What are we looking at here?
Good morning, Mayor Adams and council members. I'm Andrew Abbey, Local Improvement District Administrator. Sue, if we could switch to the presentation. This is an overview map of the project area. This project would improve 82nd Avenue on the west side of the street and Bybee Boulevard on the north side of the street. You can see that black dashed outline in the center of the page here. That's the project area. You can see a general location between Duke and Flavelle on 82nd Avenue. This is a close-up view of the project area. You can see the frontage there along 82nd Avenue that would be improved. You can also see the frontage improvement that we'd be doing along the north side of Bybee. If you look at those blue or purple lines, I'm a little bit colorblind this morning, but if you look at the lines that are drawn around 81st Place, you can see that we are contemplating a possible widening of 81st Place north of Bybee, as well as possibly extending it to the north property line of Tax Lot 8700. That particular work is actually not within the scope of the LID as it stands right now, because it would require demolition of an existing building, so I didn't want to put together an LID scope that committed us to building a street where we have an existing building that's in the way. That work would most likely be handled through two